Welcome to this special live coverage of the spring general election here on your local Civic Media radio station.
News director Terry Bell and a team of political experts will be checking in with reporters from around the state. You'll get results from your local races, along with insight into what's happening with one of the most important in the country, an open seat on the state Supreme Court.
This special coverage is brought to you by Bug Tussle Wireless, keeping you connected to the world around you, and Chad's Design Build in Madison, sustainable renovation since 1992. It all starts now, live on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Well, this we can say without any hesitation, Janet Protasiewicz, the yes questions on the statewide referendum, Tom Nelson, the Outagamie County Executive, all of the incumbents on the Mount Pleasant Village Board, just among the winners tonight. A lot of races still yet to be determined, and we bring in Jimmy Cuska, who is keeping an eye on some local school and community referendums. Jimmy.
Terry, good to talk a little bit about some of the referenda tonight. I know the statewide referenda, because everybody in the state had to vote on them, attracted a lot of attention, and those overwhelmingly passed. But a number of schools had some interesting decisions to make with federal money drying up. Schools have to make very tough decisions about operations. And so a great number of them went to operational referenda tonight. Now, historically, operational referenda are more successful than what they call issue debt referenda, because operational referenda are over a set number of years. And it's just to be able to provide for teachers and programming, whereas the issue debt is the more, I guess, more familiar type, where you're building a new school, adding a gym, things of that nature. So I was interested to see tonight how this would play out, given the expected high turnout with all the races. And it's been kind of a mixed bag of results tonight. A couple of surprising referenda failing in some communities that really felt like they needed these services. But there were a couple of districts that were talking about consolidation, closing the district within a couple of years if they couldn't get some of these operational referenda passed. Now, we talked about Adams Friendship in Athens in central Wisconsin, who had mentioned consolidation as part of potentially consolidating. But I'm happy to report tonight that those operational referenda have actually passed by pretty wide margins, especially Adams Friendship. So those referenda have actually passed in those districts. And so those school districts will be just fine. Their plans will be good. There were a number of operational referenda across the state. I got a big board next to me looking at some of them around the state that passed. Looking at some of the recurring ones, I thought La Crosse was one of the interesting ones, kind of a nice test, a test case. They had an issue debt referendum to consolidate their high schools into one. They have two high schools into one, close a number of middle and elementary schools to bring it in. And that was in November. And that referendum was a very expensive one, but it failed miserably. Over 70% of people rejecting that referendum. So I was a little surprised and a little interested to see what would happen with a $60 million operational referendum tonight. And in La Crosse, that one actually did pass. So some other results, just to get you on up to date on the school referenda. In Marshfield, they had the biggest price tag of any referenda in the state this spring at $99.5 million. And voters overwhelmingly rejected that referendum. So that one did come to pass. In Beloit, they had two referenda questions. One was the operational that we've talked about, and one was issued debt to work on facilities. And both of those failed by very narrow margins. There was another one in Manitowoc. They had a five-year non-recurring referendum for operations, and that one passed by 50 votes. 5-0 votes out of over 4,500 that were cast in that election. My last thought on this, Terry, before I turn it back over to you, we talked a little bit about municipal referenda funding things like police, fire departments, EMS. Maybe you want to have ATVs, town clerks, things like that. A little surprised, there were a couple of them in southeastern Wisconsin that did not pass, but most of the state passed those ones. I'm still tallying up some of those results. They're a little harder to find. They're buried a bit, but I didn't see anything that really jumped out at me in the municipal ones. Those were widely expected to pass. And then there were some county referendums, advisory ones, non-binding, on the 1849 election abortion ban, the law in Wisconsin. Eau Claire, La Crosse, Vernon, and Milwaukee had this question on the ballots. And in Eau Claire, La Crosse, and Milwaukee, those advisory referenda questions overwhelmingly passed in those counties. So that's where we stand on some of the referenda questions posed to voters affecting things right in their community.
Sounds like voters are pulling back a little bit from past referendums. These are bucking the trends. We're seeing more of these referenda fail than succeed, which is going against recent trends.
Yeah, and we saw a couple of years ago in the off year where it was during COVID, we saw 40% of school referenda fail, right? Well, I've seen a number tonight that kind of jump out because they're districts that have talked about cutting programming or cutting certain activities or even athletics. And seeing some of those go down, and sometimes by wide margins, been surprising. I'm still updating my spreadsheet. I'm about halfway through it, but I got to say, it's probably going to end up being just a little lower than the 70 to 80% that passed for schools anyway. And for the municipal ones, which have been 85 to 90% approved, it's probably going to end up right around there. But the school ones are interesting because I'm seeing some of the bigger ones fall, and some of the operational ones, and even towns like by Madison, like Barneville, for example, we're seeing those fail by narrow margins. It's really interesting to see the trend this election. And if I have another update tonight, if I don't get one here with us, I'll have it on Civic Media's website with just kind of a rundown of all the school referenda tonight.
Very good. Jimmy Cuska, thank you very much. Chad Holmes is keeping an eye on judicial races all over Wisconsin. Chad.
Terry, again, you talked so much about the state Supreme Court race, and I think along the same lines, a very good night for those on the left with the major race in the Court of Appeals, District 1 Court of Appeals. Incumbent Judge Bill Brash goes down by a wide margin. He loses to his opponent, lawyer Sarah Genan. 41-year-old Genan defeats the 71-year-old Brash. Brash was an appointee of Governor Scott Walker back in 2015, but falls tonight 66% right now to 34%. And Brash had a lot of folks who have been working on Republican campaigns recently on his payroll for this election. And also, he's a guy that I think was trying to keep some of his thoughts below the radar, but his finance chair put out an email last month that kind of came back and I think bit him a little bit, and I think the voters noticed it. Also, Brash, back in 2015, when he applied for this open seat, sent Governor Walker a note that called that the Wisconsin Supreme Court, when it upheld Act 10, as, quote, one of the best United States or Wisconsin Supreme Court opinions in the last 30 years. It just feels like that voters, whether throughout the state of Wisconsin, and in this case, District 1 Court of Appeals, which is Milwaukee County. Again, there are four different districts here in my part of the state, here in the north central part of the state. It is a very large district, but in Milwaukee, Milwaukee County has its own district, District 1. And as I mentioned earlier, again, Sarah Genan, a young judge, and you talk about perhaps again the bench, somebody they may want to keep an eye on for future Supreme Court races, as the Liberals may want to try to extend a 4-3 edge to maybe 5-2 in the next coming years. Also, again, a number of other races involved with circuit judge races. Real quickly, again, a new seat in Wood County. The district attorney of Wood County, Craig Lambert, loses to a Wisconsin Rapids attorney, Timothy Giebert. Also, Winnebago County, a very close race, but it looks as though incumbent judge Scott Wolt will win by about 1,000 votes or so. Waukesha County saw the incumbent judge Fred Strampy lose to former state representative Cody Horlocker. Washington County incumbent judge Ryan J. Hetzel is a winner. Vernon County DA Timothy J. Gaskell was able to win the open seat. Sheboygan County saw attorney George Limbeck run for a seat being vacated by Judge Daniel Borowski. Sheboygan County branch number 2, attorney James A. Hosh, former assistant DA, he is the winner of that open seat. And in Sawyer County, Monica Isham Chase wins a newly created judicial seat.
Thank you very much, Chad Holmes. Yes, thank you so much for the new information. Don Brown, I believe, is standing by. And before we get to Don, I think we'd be remiss if we did not mention that Corey Mason has been declared the winner of the Racine mayoral race. That's happening down in Don's neck of the woods, who's also keeping an eye on things in Milwaukee and Waukesha. Don.
Sure, Terry. So as I mentioned, there were two close races District 1 still remains. Haven't had any new numbers on that. So former state rep David Bowen holds a 34-vote lead over Andrea Pat, DEI equal rights specialist with the city of Milwaukee. In District 9, as you in the last my last report around 9:25, I had said that there was a 67-vote difference between Laressa Taylor and Odell Ball, the two educators. About 15 minutes after the report, that number narrowed to 31, and that with like 80% coming in. But then just really 10, 15 minutes later, with 95% reporting, Taylor's lead is now 117 votes. So a little bit more margin for her. You know, we'll see again, 5% of the votes remain to be counted. Odell Ball, in addition to being a retired educator with a long history in Milwaukee, he's also the husband of County Sheriff Danita Ball, so some deep roots there in that area. But Laressa Taylor, in addition to being an educator, was also a very active block, you know, watch coordinator, neighborhood leader, if you will. And her involvement in the community seems to carry a lot of weight for her in this this close election. I also want to note, too, that these three districts have been vacant for a long time. This district here, the incumbent was arrested on some charges of fraud, and so that seat's been vacant since November. District 1's been vacant since last. Both 1 and 5 have been vacant since last August. In District 5, with 95% of the vote counted, Lamont Westmoreland, I would say, is the unofficial winner with 67% to 32.86% lead over Annette Jackson. And Lamont Westmoreland is a small business entrepreneur who he had built a he built a successful commercial color coding business after working as a small business lender, and his business serves residential and commercial clients, and so he had a real big platform of business development and job creation that obviously seems to resonate for that District 5 community, which is in the Northwest and represents includes Timmerman Airport and Mount Mary University. Jumping back over to Waukesha, Diane Voigt, let's see if I can find her. Yes. So Diane Voigt has moved into second place, just barely. She actually took that position back from David Wadd. But the most important thing is that she leads incumbent Corey Montijo by just over 430 votes with, again, 95% of the vote counted. So three of the candidates get chosen, three of the four candidates. So wishing Diane well there. And we'll be watching that closely, you know, through the remainder of our coverage here. So, and yet, if time allows, Terry, just one final comment is we talked about the weather today, and thankful for Brittany's report. And there was an old adage that when there was bad weather, the Democrats would stay home and not go out and vote. And it begs the question, and I'd love to hear some, maybe Maurice can weigh in on this, that might have been that element of the Democratic Party that has jumped to the Republican Party over the last, you know, 40, 50 years. Maybe that adage now applies to a lot of these maybe lunch pail Republicans, being the weather being what it is today.
Interesting question. Thank you for the insights, Don Brown. Some mayoral races have been called, and Terry Barr is standing by to share the latest information. Terry, are you there?
I sure am. Joining you right now, as I'm looking at some of those last numbers coming in, I do believe we've got all the final results for all the mayoral races that we've been tracking. And yes, in Green Bay, we now know that the incumbent Eric Genrich is going to be back for a second term as Green Bay mayor. Now, we've talked throughout the evening, Terry, about all of the outsider money spent, $1 billion in this Green Bay mayoral race, which is record-breaking when you consider this. Both of the gentlemen running for mayor of Green Bay also we're starting to get some threats from other leaders throughout Green Bay and the county. And Eric Genrich, who is going to be the mayor again for a second term, he says his biggest thing is to work with city residents. And he really wants to bring everybody together to move the city forward. He feels Green Bay is basically stuck in a past that they can't do that anymore. Stevens Point Mayor, those numbers are starting to come in now. We've got about two of the 11 precincts they count there. And it looks like he's going to remain in office already 8 years as the mayor. This is Mike Wizzo we're talking about. He had been a county board supervisor. And Melissa Johnson, it ends up Mike is beating her by more than double the vote in the Stevens Point mayor race. There was also a write-in that we heard about primary back in February, Craig Tesh. He only has been able to garner a little more than 100 write-in votes, but, you know, not bad for a write-in. I realized from when we were talking about him in the primary that he was really, really dedicated to wanting to run, even if it meant he didn't win a primary spot, that he was going to go as a write-in, which he did. Racine Mayor, you guys mentioned it. Corey Mason, also the incumbent, elected mayor in 2017. He will remain in that seat in Racine. Howard Village President, we called this one quite a while ago. Bert McIntyre, another incumbent. He is seeking or has now won his fourth term. Village of Howard, that is a fast-growing village right outside of the city of Green Bay. Then we've got Sasha Rhodes Conway in Madison. She is the incumbent and will get a second term as mayor in Madison. And we've also got Middleton mayor. And right now, this is looking to be Emily Job over Kathy Olson. Again, no incumbent in that race, but those two women had been on the city council, and so they ran against each other to be Middleton's next mayor. I think that covers your mayors. I'm hearing some loud thunder and lightning, so I know that we've got those thunderstorm warnings moving on in.
Thank you very much, Terry Barr.
Quick update for you, Terry and Terry. Severe thunderstorm warnings right now for different parts of our listening area for WRCE and Richland Center. Lone Rock and then Spring Green down to Dodgeville. Also, western parts of Dane County over to Mazamani. A severe thunderstorm watch now in effect until 10:45. And also a new thunderstorm, severe thunderstorm watch for eastern Dane County, looking at the cities of Sun Prairie, Stoughton, Oregon, Cottage Grove, McFarland, over to Lake Mills, Watertown, and Jefferson County. Severe thunderstorm warning until 11 p.m. Both of these storms carry histories of golf balls to quarter-size hail, winds excess of 60 miles per hour, 50 to 60 miles per hour. So if you are in parts of northeastern Iowa County from Dodgeville then up to southern Sauk County and Spring Green, or if you're in eastern Dane County, Stoughton, over to Sun Prairie, Lake Mills area, take cover now as you have a severe thunderstorm warning until 11 o'clock.
Very good. Thank you, Todd Albaugh. We will have some analysis and a look back at this very unusual and historic election night in Wisconsin right here on your local Civic Media radio station. We are rounding the corner and heading home on Civic Media's election night coverage in what we knew would be an historic night, but maybe we didn't know to what extent. We do know that Janet Protasiewicz will be the next Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice, and we do know that that will tip the ideological balance of the court to the left. What we don't know yet is who is going to emerge in the special election for the 8th Senate District. Right now, a razor-thin margin. Pretty much both candidates are at 50%, with 94% of the votes counted. Again, that's in the 8th Senate District, just north of Milwaukee, between Republican Dan Knoedl and Democrat Jody Habish-Sinkin. And the question I have for you, Maurice Shepard and Todd Albaugh, what does Wisconsin look like after tonight? is the question I have. Maurice, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I'll start with, again, the state Supreme Court again. I think that for the state Supreme Court, it'll move to sort of reset and look at, again, some of the policies and issues we've talked about, reproductive rights, voting rights, and that sort. But also, I think in terms of Wisconsin moving forward, just looking at in terms of politics, I think, and this was mentioned earlier, I think for Republicans, they may want to, and we still don't know what's going to happen in the 8th Senate district yet, so that's going to be important. But I think for Republicans, particularly when it comes to, again, the state Supreme Court, they have to reevaluate their strategy. Do they have a plan? Do they have, again, a bench for Democrats? I think they will be energized in this, once again, spring election. And for Democrats, I think they will hope that this will carry them over to the 2024 sort of election cycle, which, quite frankly, we're in already with the presidential election and that sort. Again, to enhance Democratic voter turnout during not just, once again, these off-year elections, but also increase them during the regular, once again, presidential election cycle.
Janet Protasiewicz certainly broke the mold by being so open about her positions on issues. Have we broken the mold now on Supreme Court races now? Do we see in the future candidates of all stripes being very upfront about how they feel about this issue or that matter?
Well, if I can jump in real quick, let me point out that this is just the beginning. If you look at, once again, the state Supreme Court right now, there are going to be a bunch of openings coming up fairly
exactly,
soon.
Exactly, yeah. 2 years, Bradley, I think, is the next one, right?
2025?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
2 years, right? Yeah, 2025 is our next Supreme Court election. Yeah.
Exactly, I'm 2025, sorry. And then Rebecca Bradley, 26, and then Annette Ziegler, I think, in 2027. So this is, I think, just, and we'll get through the 2024 election cycle, but immediately following that, we're going to have openings again. Again, if these individuals, if they decide to run again, or if they decide maybe to, again, leave the court, but this is going to reoccur. We're going to have more elections at a much quicker pace for the state Supreme Court.
And certainly that's on the horizon. I'm curious about, I mean, what we're used to in a judicial race is, well, I can't talk about matters that may become for the court, and I have to be impartial and rule based on the law. Is that script now just thrown out? And it's now, I'm Joe Blow, I'm running for the Supreme Court. I like this, I like that, I don't like this, I don't like that. Vote for me if you agree. Like a traditional politician for, legislative office.
Maurice, I'll ask it this way. I'd be interested in your take on this. For me, what we're seeing tonight is the effects of Trumpism. Donald Trump changed the political landscape, in my opinion, in 2016. He was unconventional. He said things you don't normally do. He went after candidates in the primary on the debate stage like nobody I'd ever seen. He went after Ted Cruz's wife. He went after Jeb Bush's masculinity, and he won. I mean, he said, the famous quote, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and nobody would care. I'd still get away with it. And I think what you're seeing tonight is Democrats have said, you know what? If that's the way to win, let's stop being pious and let's play on the field they've laid out. And I'm not comparing to saying Judge Janet is anywhere close to Donald Trump. I'm simply saying, and I think that the Democrats have said, we're going to take the gloves off and we'll reset it. And there's no sense of pussyfooting around and not saying what you really think. Judge Janet said the truth. I don't think she went over the line. This is my opinion. She simply said, I think the maps are rigged. And I believe in women's reproductive rights. She didn't pull any punches. And you know what? Those were issues that Wisconsin voters cared about, and she won.
I agree with you with that in terms of voters increasingly want more authenticity from, again, those that are running for office. I think in terms of Donald Trump, I think he's in a category, quite frankly, all by himself, which may be a good thing to some people. But I think in terms of Protasiewicz, she's borrowing from, I think, as Terry sort of is hinting at here, sort of the new playbook. I think in general, a lot of politics has changed with social media. Again, the success of someone like Trump, that if you're going to win, particularly in a statewide election, you've got to be much more authentic. If you're, once again, in a district race or in that sort of thing where you can meet everyone, literally sort of physically meet them, practice here what's called home style, that's one thing. But in these large, particularly sort of statewide races, and that's where the Democrats really have to win when it comes to state government, because of the way the maps are drawn for the state legislature. If they're going to have any power or authority in state government, it will have to be in many of these statewide races. They will, I think Protasiewicz has laid out a good roadmap playbook in terms of how to do that. Get the money early, get lots of it, but also be engaging, as Todd pointed out, engage the voters.
I think it's interesting that both of you mentioned Donald Trump, because I think he was largely a non-factor tonight. There was some speculation that maybe his arraignment today might be a motivator for his supporters to vote for Dan Kelly, or that it might cause more Democrats to vote than normal. I would be surprised if today's events in New York City had any impact on Wisconsin.
I think that's true. I think number one, though, Dan Kelly was a bad candidate all the way around. He just was not a good candidate, number one, for Republicans and conservatives. And number two, Republicans after tonight, in my opinion, have some soul searching to do. They are on the wrong side of the abortion issue when it comes to Wisconsin voters. They're on the wrong side of gerrymandering. They have to regroup and decide who they are moving into 2024.
Very good. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much. Todd Albaugh, Maurice Shepard, Brian Kelly, Evan Preston, and so many people who played a huge part in this broadcast. We are grateful to you all, and we will have more up-to-date information tomorrow right here on your local Civic Media radio station. Good night, everyone.